you're watching this, I know what you're thinking. Hey, wait a minute. That's not the bald pastor with the ginger beard or the other bald guy whose nickname might trigger some ethnic sensitivities or the other guy with the funny accent who pronounces words weird. And you would be correct. But the most important part about me is the fact that I am Canadian, and that pertains to this episode. So it is my joy to be with you today as the Canadian Micaiah, the bringer of bad news, who apparently never has anything good to say. It's important for our American brothers to know what's happening in Canada for a few reasons. Where we are is most likely where the U.S. will be in 3 to 5 to 7 years. And in some states, you guys are already there. We also need your prayers and your encouragement to be faithful in a dark spiritual place like Canada. And it is one of the darkest spiritual places I could think of, certainly in the West. We're going to have a good time together. And as we do a little Canadian civics class today, I'm hoping it's informative and encouraging and maybe shocks you out of your, we don't really know what's happening in Canada and we don't really care about it that much. Well, you will know what's happening in Canada and you should care about it. I'm Andrew DiBartolo, filling in for Pastor Toby, Chocolate Knox, and the Water Boy on Cross Politic. And this is Liberty Dispatch. Welcome to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines, quite literally over the border, into the Canadian culture war for you to see. Our show is produced by Liberty Coalition Canada in partnership with Christian Week. LCC exists to establish Christ's justice and righteousness and to defend those who stand. Christian Week exists to provide a practical, balanced, and hope-filled perspective on national and global issues. You can reach us, as always, with any questions, comments, or criticisms. You might have some of those after our episode today. You can hit us at mailbag@libertycoalitioncanada.com. Before we get any further, I just want to mention quickly, we have some conferences coming up. So for our Canadian listeners who are part of the Fight Laugh Feast Network, or even our American listeners, if you happen to be close to the border of one of these cities and you're willing to make the journey, or if you're visiting in Canada because you want to visit in a tyranny for a little bit that's really just a little bit north of you, this is for you too, because we want to make sure you sign up for our Politics in the Pulpit conference. And I feel like for a cross-politic audience, Politics in the Pulpit seems like it's something that's right up your alley, and we will definitely welcome American guests and visitors to these conferences. The goal of these conferences is to help Christians engage in the political and cultural spheres in effective and godly ways. So rather than keep politics out of the pulpit, Christians, including pastors, must speak boldly and clearly into Canadian culture and politics. So you can join us at one of three locations. And again, for our American listeners, if you're close, I'd love to see you there. We're going to be in Weston, Nova Scotia on April the 20th, Ingersoll, Ontario on May the 4th, and New Westminster, British Columbia on May 25th. That's only a few hours away from Moscow, Idaho, if any of you guys want to come up to New Westminster, British Columbia. It'd be great to see you. You can head to libertycoalitioncanada.com/politicsinthepulpit. Register today. Seats are limited. By the way, if you are American, once you work in the conversion, the cost is essentially free. I mean, you can buy one hipster coffee or you can come to the conference. That's what we're dealing with. You can also hit us up at churches@libertycoalitioncanada.com. Let's assume one of our American listeners is thinking, this is great. We need to see more of this, especially in Canada. We love the idea. We want to support it. We want to see this conference happen, and we want it to be a success. Then if you're so inclined and you want to support and donate toward the cost of the conference, again, churches@libertycoalitioncanada.com will help direct you. libertycoalitioncanada.com/politicsinthepulpit. Register today. Are you thinking differently about your family's finances and resources while others worry about surviving to the next paycheck? The hand of the diligent will rule while the slothful will be put to forced labor, the scriptures say. Train your mindset to see where God is moving, where to invest and build so you can create, protect, and pass on wealth. What is your plan to use your economic power? Joe Garrisey with Backwards Planning Financial coaches his clients to make this kind of impact on their world for generations by integrating investments, debt, insurance, tax-efficient strategies, and legacy planning. Go to backwardsplanningfinancial.nm.com to connect with him today. So if you've never watched an episode of Liberty Dispatch before, what we do is we examine Canadian news, culture, and politics, and we try to respond to them from a distinctly Christian, conservative, and Canadian perspective. And that's what I'm going to do for you today, as I'm a guest hosting Cross Politic, but it's going to be with a little bit of a twist. I'll use stories in Canada as a little bit of a springboard to show how the differences in our countries ultimately account for these completely wild stories, as both a lesson and a warning for you Americans, a lesson and a warning. So I want to begin with this right off the bat. The Constitution of the United States, a document you are well acquainted with, ratified in 1788, is a pretty marvelous document. It outlines the separations of powers and the checks and balances among the three branches of government, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial, as well as the responsibilities of both individual states and the federal government and the relationship between these entities. Now, the Bill of Rights, which is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, was ratified only 3 years later in 1791. And essentially, they protect the rights of Americans given to them by God and God alone. So shortly after the Constitution is ratified, these amendments, the Bill of Rights, are also ratified, securing the rights that are yours because God has given you those rights. Now let's go north of the border a little bit, and right away you're going to see the difference, and the difference matters. Canada became a nation officially in 1867, and we were governed by the Constitution Act of 1867. Now this Constitution also outlined various powers and responsibilities of the Canadian federal government, as well as the various responsibilities of provinces, which are our versions of states. Our Canadian Bill of Rights was enacted in 1960. That's just under 100 years later. And it only outlines federal matters, not provincial matters. So it doesn't discuss the individual rights within provinces. It's merely federal matters. So in 1982, this is over 100 years after our Constitution is enacted, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms was enacted. Now, to give some perspective, this is only 2 years before I was born, so it is not that long ago. The Charter is essentially our Constitution, but as we've seen in the last several years, it is weaker, it is woker, and it is wickeder of a version of a Constitution than the United States Constitution. So your Constitution guarantees the rights of individuals, for example, the right to engage in free and lawful speech. Right, you can't incite violence, you can't engage in slander or libel where you can actually harm the well-being and livelihood of a person, but you can engage in free, lawful speech without the threat of punishment. You have the right to own and use firearms, primarily to protect yourselves from a tyrannical state, but also to defend your property, your person, and your life and your family. You have the right to not be the victim of an unlawful search and seizure, the right to a speedy trial by your peers, the right not to have to give up your identity unless you're being suspected or you've been suspected of committing a crime. Wonderful things. Now, we have those in theory in Canada, but our charter doesn't actually protect us in the same way as your Constitution, which is a substantially more robust document, does. We do have the right to freedom of conscience, religion, speech, peaceful assembly, and association. We have the right to travel freely inside of and out and then back into our country. We have the right not to be subject to an unreasonable search and seizure. We have the right to life, liberty, and security. However, and this is a big, gigantic, universal-sized however, all of these rights are essentially conditional because of Section 1 of the Charter, known as the Exemption Clause. So this is how our Constitution, our legal governing constitutional document, begins. Quote, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms guarantees the rights and freedoms set out in subject only to such reasonable limits prescribed by law as can be demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. So in other words, reasonable limits can be imposed on our rights, and our rights can be suspended or ignored so long as it can be quote-unquote demonstrably justified. Now, when our lawmakers and judges are the ones determining that, and when they're woke, we obviously have a problem. Case in point, during the COVID era, churches were shut down, fined to the moon, pastors were arrested during COVID, clearly violating our charter rights here in Canada, which judges admitted. They clearly admitted, yes, your Section 2 charter rights were violated. However, because these limitations were reasonable given the situation, in this case, the virus, our rights to assemble, worship, and travel were ignored, and they were infringed upon. In other words, and this is a very important aspect of Canadian life, our rights are conditional rights, not absolute rights. And if legislators and judges determine that our rights can be justifiably limited, then we don't actually have those rights. This is a way that we depart significantly from our American brothers and sisters with regard to constitutions and the securing of rights and freedoms given to us by God. Our rights are only conditional rights that can be limited if the right people determine it was justifiable to do so. Now, what does that do? And what's the effect of that upon a country? Well, last time I was on Cross Politic, just really a week or so ago, I addressed two pieces of legislation in Canada, both making their way through Parliament, Bill C-367 and Bill C-63. Now, I should have the right to say unpopular and inflammatory things. For example, people who actually believe that they are trans probably suffer from some sort of mental illness related to some sinfulness and suppression of truth in their own lives, and men can't become women, and vice versa. Now, in Canada, if that speech does harm to someone, and harm is very vaguely defined in our criminal code, and it can be demonstrated by someone, probably some woke judge or legislator or lawyer or someone who's suffering with some sort of victim oppression status, then my right to free speech can be limited, and I can be charged with hate speech. And these two pieces of legislation want to first make it so that I cannot use the Bible as justification for my beliefs, and second, put me in prison for a penalty with a maximum of life in prison for engaging in hate speech. So Canada doesn't have free speech protections. Our freedom of speech is limited and can be ignored so long as it's demonstrated that the limitations are demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. Now, I'm not going to get into too much more detail about these pieces of legislation. I would encourage you, if you haven't seen it, go back a few episodes, watch the interview I did with Toby and Gabe regarding these pieces of legislation and what's happening. I did a deep dive into the bills. I looked at some of the text of the bill and the implications. Okay, another example of our limited protections was highlighted in a few news stories in the last couple of weeks. And this is where the episode's really going to take off, where we're going to be looking at various news stories in Canada to highlight how our weaker systems of legislation and separation of powers, our constitution, the judicial branch, account for what we have in Canada, which is a serious limitation of our rights and really some grave concerns for the future and further infringing of those rights. So in Canada, we have the right to defend ourselves from harm, but the stipulations around it make it so that basically if someone comes into my home and I inflict physical harm on them in order to defend my life, my family, my property, I will most likely get in trouble. And by trouble, I mean spend a little bit of time in jail. So I want to read from the Canadian Criminal Code concerning self-defense, and then we're going to get to some stories to highlight the absurdity of this. So, quote, a person is not guilty of an offense. This is with regard to personal defense and use of force. They're not guilty of an offense if they believe on reasonable grounds that force is being used against them or another person, or that the threat of force being made against them or another person, that the act that constitutes the offense is committed for the purpose of defending or protecting themselves or the other person from that use or threat of force, or the act is committed in reasonable So the act committed is reasonable in the circumstances. I mean, it seems pretty good. Again, there's some language there that's concerning, but you can defend yourself. Now, right after that, we get to this section. In determining whether the act committed is reasonable in the circumstances, the court shall consider the relevant circumstances of the person, the other parties, and the act, including but not limited to the following factors. These are some of them. The nature of the force or threat, the extent to which the use of force was imminent, and whether there were other means available to respond to the potential use of force, whether any party or incident used or threatened to use a weapon, the size, age, gender, and physical capabilities of the parties to the incident, the nature and proportionality of the person's response to the use or threat of force. Now, there's a lot of ways we can take those and come up with some pretty awful examples, but let me boil it down for you. In Canada, if I use a gun to defend myself from a home invader or a threat, I will go to jail. If I merely brandish the gun, I'll probably go to jail. The only hope I have is if the assailant opens fire with a weapon, misses me, and I return fire and hit him. Now, maybe, and it's still a big maybe, and if I get an amazing lawyer, I might not get in trouble. But there's a good chance that if I use a firearm to defend myself in very reasonable circumstances, I will still get in trouble and probably go to jail. The rule in Canada is that my force cannot exceed the threat. So if a man enters my house with no weapon and I use a bat to defend myself, I'll go to jail because my force exceeds the threat of force. If he has a bat and I have a sword, and I don't actually have a sword, but if I did have a sword, right, if he comes out with a bat and I bring out a claymore, I will go to jail. If he has a loaded gun, points the gun at me, doesn't fire the gun, but I fire a gun to defend myself, I will go to jail in Canada. Our prime minister is on record as saying that Canadians do not have the right to defend themselves with firearms in Canada ever. And he's just not pulling that out of his butt. That, in fact, is how these things are prosecuted and how these things are dealt with in the courts. Here's a couple examples. Listen to this story. Quote, a Manitoba judge says that a man was justified in trying to defend himself from a late night intruder, but sentenced him to jail time for killing the intruder when he took that defense too far. Dakota Pratt, 28, was sentenced on Thursday to 5 years in prison after a jury in Brandon's Court of Queen's Bench found him guilty in April of manslaughter in the attack that killed Vincent Bunn. Court heard Bunn, 21, entered Pratt's home on the Birdtail Sioux First Nations, about 115 kilometers northwest of Brandon, Manitoba, in the early morning of September 2nd, 2016. Pratt, who was asleep in the basement bedroom, awoke to a feeling of being stabbed in the head. He got up and found a knife-wielding intruder in his room, not knowing who the person was, chased him into the hallway. A struggle ensued and continued through the man's home, the home's main floor, and then outside the deck, where Bunn was stabbed with his own knife 13 times, according to the agreed-upon facts read out by Cummings at Pratt's sentencing hearing. Court was told the final stab to Bunn's heart was the fatal one, and that he was kicked a number of times. Afterwards, he was justified. This is what the judge says. He was justified in taking defensive action, but the jury has concluded that his taking the knife of Mr. Bunn and stabbing him multiple times went beyond what was necessary for self-defense. They sentenced him to 5 years in prison for going too far, which is absolutely outrageous. So this is the situation. A person tries to kill you. You don't know what they'll do if they'll get up. He's already stabbed you in the head, at least, and you don't know what's going to happen. So you struggle, you get the knife, you stab him once, what, you roll off and you roll the dice, hoping he won't get back up again and stab you more. You don't know what they're on. You don't know if he's on some sort of drugs where his adrenaline is pumping and he's strong. He's not feeling the pain. He's going to get back up again. I'm sure we've all seen videos of officers tasing and shooting assailants 3-4 times. They get back up, but they don't drop them. You have no idea what's going on. You have to neutralize the threat. And it's not because of anger or hatred. It's because it's your life or it's his life. So you neutralize the threat. But in Canada, what the court expects is that you let the criminal live so that he can do just a few years in jail at taxpayer expense, not a whole lot. And you roll the dice with your life. Okay. Now, how about this? I mean, that's bananas. But again, our right to defense is limited. It's limited, and we don't actually have one here in Canada. Now, in Toronto, Canada, which is Canada's biggest city, auto thefts are up this year 400% from last year. It's bananas what's going on in Toronto right now. The Toronto police have issued their advice on how to avoid any confrontations or violence. This is what Constable Marco Riccardi had to say. While well-meaning, there are also other ways to prevent auto theft-motivated home invasions. To prevent the possibility of being attacked in your home, leave your fobs at your front door in a Faraday bag. They're breaking into your home to steal your car. They don't want anything else. This is what our police services are saying. Just give up your property, because if instead of defending yourself or instead of properly punishing criminals, to avoid any issues, let them take what they want and keep yourself safe. Just leave your car keys out in a bag outside your front door. This is what they're encouraging. Now, I mean, that's outrageous. That's absolutely outrageous. Now, this was also related. It's another wild story recently where officers wanted to help people dealing with porch pirates, which are, you get an Amazon package, it's sitting on your porch, someone comes and steals it before you get out and get your package. So listen to this, quote, Canadian police warn residents who've been the victim of package thieves not to post surveillance footage of their packages being stolen, as it would be in violation of a criminal's right to a private life. Lieutenant Benoit Richard, a communications officer for Quebec Provincial Police, urged against posting images of the alleged thieves that could have been captured by door cameras. He said, you cannot post the images yourself because you have to remember, in Canada, we have the presumption of innocence, and posting that picture could be a violation of private life. If you get some proof that somebody might have stolen something, call the police, give that proof to the police, we'll do the investigation, bring that person to justice, and file some charges, he explained. So don't post the video doorbell footage, or else you might be charged if someone else takes action against the thief. Let's do one more. Freedom of the press and association is also a myth in Canada. David Menzies, a reporter and journalist with Rebel News, one of the few conservative-leaning outlets in Canada, has been arrested twice in the last 6 months, falsely, by the way, for doing his job and asking uncomfortable questions. First, he asked our deputy prime minister why she supported the Iran government, which, by the way, is a pro-Hamas terror group that helped to fund the attack in Israel on October 7th. And while he was doing so, an undercover RCMP officer bumped into him, then arrested him for assaulting the officer, brought him to the station. He was released eventually, and there were no consequences for the officer. None, other than his face being posted everywhere on social media. Now, recently, and like within the last day or so, Menzies was at one of the many large pro-Hamas, anti-Israel protests happening in Canada. And they are huge in the big cities in Canada. And people are calling for the literal death of Jews and the eradication of people in Israel, which should be against the law. I'm pretty sure inciting violence and calling for the death of people is against the law. But not if you're a part of the protected people class in Canada. No, no, no. Then you're fine. So he was asking one, Menzies was asking one individual questions. Someone who, by the way, is on video calling for violence and has been to several protests. And once the individual said, well, you know what, now I'm going to pray, so leave me alone, police swooped in and arrested Menzies for disturbing the prayer, which was in the middle of a street. This wasn't in a mosque. This was in the middle of a Toronto street, and he was arrested for disturbing them, or he was pulled away for disturbing them. So even after Menzies identified himself as a member of the press, is all on video, he shows his credentials, officers charged him with failing to identify himself and obstructing police. Menzies was eventually released from the police station around midnight with two charges against him. So what I'm trying to show you here is that in Canada, even though we have our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, there are so many holes in it. And the limitations clause means that we don't have the same protections and securing of our rights and freedoms as you do in the United States with your constitution. Public houses or pubs are not just places to drink beer, wine, cider, or even something a little stronger. It is also a unique social center, very often the focus of community life in villages. towns, and cities throughout the length and breadth of the world. Cross Politic hopes to emulate that for you and yours. That's why you should grab yourself a pub membership at fightlaughfeast.com. They need you to ride with them on this, folks. Pull up a chair, grab a pint, and join the ride at fightlaughfeast.com. That's fightlaughfeast.com. The other thing about Canada and the makeup of our country is that we lean toward authoritarianism much more than in the United States, right? In the U.S., you have checks and balances and powers distributed among the branches of government. Congress makes laws, the Senate approves them, the president can veto them, and the Supreme Court can deem them unlawful, and there's even layers of checks and balances between the different branches among that. In Canada, whatever party controls parliament, so long as they have the votes, can pass whatever laws they want. The Senate will almost always go along with it, and the Supreme Court can basically do nothing about it. Now, the executive branch in Canada has way more power than in the United States, and individual provinces don't have nearly the same sort of power as individual states do in the U.S. Now, given the fact that we didn't break from the monarchy, it's not surprising the amount of power at the top here in Canada, whereas in the United States, there's a clear breakaway from the monarchy and all of the corruption therein. Now, when the prime minister appoints judges, we're talking about judicial stuff, there's no vetting or voting process. It's not like in the States where judges have to be grilled by the Senate. They get on the bench. That's it. And the result is a woke activist court, just like we have in Canada. And they end up doing things like this. This was posted by our Supreme Court on X recently. Quote, March 10, we celebrate International Day of Women Judges, which recognize the importance of the full and equal participation of women at all levels of the judiciary. Achieving gender parity among judges at all levels in Canada is a step in the right direction towards having greater diversity on the bench. Canadians need to see themselves reflected in their judiciary because that builds trust in our democratic institutions. Hashtag International Day of Women Judges. Now, that's a woke hot mess, but you know what makes it worse and almost completely ludicrous and insane? And I mean much worse. Listen to this story. Quote, the Supreme Court of Canada ruled in a recent sexual assault case that it was problematic for a lower court judge to refer to the alleged victim as a woman, implying that the more appropriate term should have been person with a vagina. Justice Sheila Martin wrote that a trial judge's use of the word a woman may have been unfortunate and engendered confusion. Martin does not specify why the word woman is confusing, but the next passage in her decision refers to the complainant as a person with a vagina, notably, not one person in the entire case is identified as transgender, and the complainant is referred to throughout as a she. So this is what the justice writes. In my respectful view, this statement, a woman, was merely a reflection of the trial judge's reasoning as opposed to reliance on an improper generalization. So it's problematic to use the word woman, according to the Supreme Court, and yet we celebrate the fact that on the Supreme Court, we have half of them being women on International Women Judge Day in Canada. I mean, that's a kind of cognitive dissonance that would make your head spin off of your body. This is the highest judicial body in our country in Canada. They don't know what a woman is, but they celebrate womanhood, but you can't say women, but it's women who are saying you can't say women. I mean, it's mind-boggling. How much confidence do you think Christians have in our courts? How much confidence do you think we have in them being able to judge rightly on matters of religious freedom and persecution? Now, this authoritarianism also looks like the state being in charge of our children and not the parents. Recently, an elected member of parliament, a part of the New Democratic Party, which is basically the Communist Party, they're even further left than the liberals. This is what he said in response to the idea of parental rights. Quote, well, I'd like to say, first of all, that there's no such thing as parental rights in Canada. There are parental responsibilities. In Canadian family law, the primary responsibility is to support and affirm their kids. Children have rights in Canada, and these kinds of policies restrict the rights that children have in Canada. Close quote. That's terrifying. terrifying. Parents don't have rights. Kids have rights. Now, some people have disregarded his claims and said, no, we do have parental rights in Canada. That's not true. But let me read to you from the Government of Canada's own website concerning our charter rights here with regard to parental rights. This is what our government has put out. Quote, parents have the right to rear their children according to their religious beliefs, including choosing religious education and choosing medical and other treatments. However, so like that should be enough, by the way. But of course, because our country is grounded upon limitations to our rights, including our constitution. However, such activities can and must be restricted when they are against the child's best interest, as determined by the state here, not by parents. This is what's so mad about this. Furthermore, the exercise of discretionary powers in a custody application that are based solely on the best interest of the child can't prevent the imposition of religious views of the non-custodial parent on the child. With respect to education, while parents have the right to pass on their religious beliefs to their children, the early exposure of children to realities that differ from those in their immediate family environment is a fact of life in society. The suggestion that exposing children to a variety of religious facts in itself infringes their religious freedom or that of their parents amounts to a rejection of the multicultural reality of Canadian society and ignores the government's obligations with regard to public education, close quote. That is so saturated with authoritarian statism. Parents, you don't have rights over your kids because they're just going to be exposed to stuff that you don't agree with. And we will determine what's in your child's best interest, not you. Public education is a necessity and we have obligations. And so you have to let the state educate your children. You have to submit them to woke Marxist indoctrination centers, i.e. public schools. And multiculturalism is a god in Canada, and that god must be worshipped. And if you don't teach your kids to worship that god, then we might have to take your kids from you. That's the kind of authoritarianism that exists in Canada. Now, you might be thinking, this, Andrew, you're right. You are the Canadian Micaiah. You are the bringer of bad news. Doesn't he ever have anything good to say? Well, I mean, what's the point of all this deep dive into the mess that is Canada? Well, this is what I want to leave you with. This is what I want our American friends thinking and considering and pondering. First of all, you are heading here in the U.S. And if you don't think you are, your eyes are not open to what's happening. The truth is, even your constitution will not be able to save you from the woke progressive cultural behemoth, because eventually they will have the numbers to amend the constitution, or they just won't listen to it altogether. And we've seen this. Sanctuary cities are an affront to the constitution. Saying, yeah, we drugs are legal here is an affront to the constitution. The individual states do what they want. It doesn't matter. And in many instances, you're already there in the United States. There are places where you're just as bad as in Canada and maybe worse. There was a story very recently, and we're going to link to it in our notes and our description. Montana parents lost custody of their 14-year-old because they wouldn't affirm the trans belief of the child. That's happening in the United States. Crazy COVID policies in California, New York were just as bad as what we saw here in Canada. Ohio, which is supposed to be a conservative stronghold, just made preborn baby murder a right under its own state constitution. And without a doubt, your federal government is all on board with the climate cult. Like, you guys are going there. You have to see you're going there. And if you think that voting in the right person or putting in the right features is going to prevent this, I'm sorry, you're wrong. You're completely wrong. You have to look at Canada and you have to see if this is where things are going. We need to learn from them, prepare accordingly, and be warned. Let us be, unfortunately, a little bit of a crystal ball into the future of where things are going in your country. And they are going there. They are going there. Second of all, we need your prayers. You know, it looks like many of us who simply speak biblical truth will be facing some serious jail time in the not too distant future. And we have a uniparty in Canada. there is no such thing as conservative and liberal, and those distinctions don't matter. It's a uniparty in our country. And we, by the way, are as evil as any Western nation. You know, I have to drill down on the numbers, but based on what I know, no nation in the West murders as many preborn babies as we do per capita as a percentage of our population. No nation in the West murders as many people via doctor-assisted murder and suicide as we do per capita. And by the way, those numbers are on a steep incline of a curve. Almost no nation per capita spends the ways we do. The province of Ontario is the largest indebted sub-sovereign in the world. California used to be the largest indebted sub-sovereign in the world without, you know, obviously it's California. California is bigger than our entire country. And one province of our country, home to maybe 10 million people, maybe 15 on the high end, is the largest indebted sub-sovereign in the world. Canada is an absolute mess. It's an absolute mess. We're all on board with the trans madness, maybe even more than you, and it's being protected and legislated every day here. So we need your prayers, and we need your encouragement, and we need you to be supporting us in various ways. This is what's happening in this country. This is the third reason why, you know, here I am being the Micaiah of Canada. And I've said this, I don't think we're going to avoid this tsunami. I don't think so. I don't think it's going to be the case for you either. I think we are past the point of repentance and the no return. I think we're in the second half of the Minor Prophets, where in the Minor Prophet books, they said, repent, maybe the Lord will be merciful, repent, he'll yet turn away his wrath. But eventually it crosses a line where the prophets say, guess what, destruction's coming, you've gone too far. And I think we've gone too far in both of our countries. And it's evidenced by our lawlessness. It's evidenced by our murder of innocent and weak victims that are the most vulnerable. It's evidenced by our godlessness. It's clear that we are under the judgment of God, and I think we're past the point of no return. So I think you in the United States need to look at what's coming when you see us, not to say, okay, let's save ourselves. The tsunami is coming. If this totally destructive tsunami is on its way and there's nothing you can do to stop it, you can't build a wall high enough, you can't barricade enough, there isn't enough time, you don't have 20 years, 30 years, you're in the midst of that kind of culture. If this tsunami is coming, what you need to do is see it, recognize it, and plan accordingly, which means you need to move to places where there are solid churches that are ready to build and fight together. Building parallel institutions, schools, thinking about economy, thinking about healthcare. You need to move with other like-minded believers to be ready and strong so you can not just survive but thrive in the days ahead. And so that when the dust settles and Western culture is fully and finally desolate, then we'd have handed off something strong to our kids and grandkids to rebuild a beautiful, wonderful Western culture 2.0, a strong church, strong biblical principles, so that they can begin the work of creating from the ashes of what was Western culture in Canada, in the United States. Friends, I think it's coming for you too. I don't think you're going to be able to avoid it. I don't think that going to places like Texas or Florida or Idaho is going to save you from the behemoth. What we need to do is gather with those who are like-minded and prepare accordingly. I think this is what we need to do, and I think this is in part why what I hope to accomplish by telling you the news in Canada to be praying for us, particularly understanding this is where things are going. So I hope that this is informative and in some way encouraging as you get ready to fight and build with the people around you in the years and in the decades to come, because I think we have a multi-generational culture war ahead of us. This has been fun. I'm glad to have taken the opportunity to fill in for the guys on Cross Politic. And so, because I'm in their house, I'm going to finish off their way. If you're single, get married. If you're married, have kids. And if you have kids, go baptize them after they profess faith in Christ and have a reasonable profession of faith, and then do so joyfully. Until next time, filling in on Cross Politic, this has been me with Liberty Dispatch. Liberty Dispatch has been brought to you in partnership with Liberty Coalition Canada and Christian Week. and has been produced by SDG Media. You can find all things Liberty Coalition Canada at libertycoalitioncanada.com.